mai, haere mai, ki tēnei hōtaka, welcome to the panel on RNZ National. Well, today a rise in unemployment in line with expectations, 31,000 more Kiwis seeking jobs than this time last year. And get this, demand for food support increased by 42% in a year, so we focus on that in just a minute. Also, imagine after many years you lose your license, your driver's license as a senior, but you still feel fighting fit to drive that car. We discuss that this evening. Also today, a popular Christchurch playground is being demolished amid safety concerns, but one petition organiser says the replacement one is too cookie cutter. Not happy with it, so we discuss that. And our question of the day today is this: what city in the world did you think was actually really overrated? A list of the world's most overrated cities came out today. That includes Auckland, how dare they? A city with the Sky Tower, Motat and Rainbow's Inn. I mean, what really do you want? So, overrated cities: Paris, Prague, London, Timaru. Text me to 101. You can email the panel at rnz.co.nz. And one just coming through: Venice. Stinky, crowded, tired, overpriced, meh. Keep them coming. 2101 or email the panel at rnz.co.nz. With me today, Verity Johnson, columnist and burlesque club owner. Kia ora, Verity.
Kia ora.
Also, Scott Campbell, director of Campbell Squared Communications. Kia ora, Scott. Good to have you here.
Kia ora.
All right, full house this evening on the panel. Nice to have you company into this. A slight rise in unemployment in line with the expectations. Official unemployment rate is 4.3% in the March 2024 quarter, compared with 4%. At 4.3%, it is the highest unemployment rate the country has experienced for 3 years. It's added around 31,000 Kiwis to the unemployment benefit. Although it is low by historical standards. Now, the average unemployment rate since Stats NZ started compiling it in 1986 has been 5.5%. Meanwhile, more people are falling behind in payments, people borrowing at strained levels, and more people utilising food support. Demand for food support increased by 42% in a year. This is what the New Zealand Food Network found. And get this, a massive 83% increase from 2021. With us, Tracy Wellington, the CEO of Kiwi Community Assistance. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Good evening. Thanks for having me along.
Very good to have you, Tracy. I was just so amazed by these numbers, actually. I mean, it's a huge increase. Tell us, what is behind it?
Pretty much it's the cost of living. New governments reversing a lot of policies that was put in place by the previous government, such as free prescription, as of today, half-price travel for under 25 is gone. The cost of essential items such as food, petrol, are putting pressure on families who may have been previously coping. Gone are the days of fixed-term mortgages of 2%, and we're now sitting at around 8%, or over 8%, in fact. So people are having to find additional funds to pay their mortgages. The lack of housing availability compounded by high mortgage rates means that renting a house is also very expensive. And then you've got insurances, council rates are also increasing. Right. And then, of course, the aftermath of Cyclone Gabrielle and other major weather events on primary produce continues to affect availability and price. This has a direct impact on the volumes that are donated to organisations such as New Zealand Food Network and KCA.
Yeah, so when you talk about it like that, gosh, it's a multiple whammy of things, isn't it? Can I ask you, Tracy, so when you've got all those bills to pay, whether it be rates or insurance or, as you say, fares free coming off or whatever, does food go down the pecking order a bit? So you pay all your bills and then go, oh, gosh, I've only got, say, $28 for the food, and that's when food assistance kicks in.
Well, it's quite a complex thing. So people are on minimum wages. They're actually not getting as much income in, and so they're juggling bills, and sometimes they go out and buy food, and the other bills don't get paid. So from what we're hearing from our partner agencies who are dealing with members of the public, it's all walks of life now trying to access aid from food banks. And if the government gets rid of school lunches, this will also put additional pressure on families not coping.
All right, let's bring our panel into this. They might have a question or some thoughts on this. Verity Johnson.
God, sorry, the dramatic announcement there. Yeah, kia ora, Tracy. I'm curious. Obviously, there's been a massive increase from last year to this year. I think it was about 30% in the stats that was sent out in terms of people who are visiting a food bank for the first time. So I'm curious, on average, how far away is your normal Kiwi from visiting a food bank? Like, what is the margin that most people live on? Is it one missed paycheck? Is it, you know, an unexpected bill of $200? But how far away is the average person from accessing food banks?
Well, more and more people are accessing food banks due to the fact that not everyone can go to a bank to get a mortgage. They're going to second and third tier lenders. So we hear stories from our partner agencies of a family that they have had an urgent bill, something unexpected like a dentist bill that they've had to go and have work done, dentistry work, and then obviously they don't pay the mortgage, and instead of being 8% penalty that they interest rate that they're paying, because they're using a second or third tier lender, they might end up owing three times the amount of money just by missing that one payment.
And has there been an increase in going to these second and third tier lenders, especially in the last 2 years?
Yes.
Right, Scott.
Yeah, it's scary, right? And I guess my concern is that we probably haven't seen the worst of it, you know, and we're now coming into winter. I'm interested, Tracy, as far as a little bit where Verity was going, is the demographic changing? Are we getting new people who are now coming in and presenting and needing support?
Yes. So literally what's happening is that people that were previously well paid, often with with mortgages, we're now finding themselves redundant. The knock-on effect from the government department's restructuring also is already impacting other businesses reliant on those people for their income, such as cafes, restaurants. Discretionary spending has all but gone. Now with even things like house renovations and home improvements are now also seeing a downturn.
So this is not just your vulnerable communities. This is middle New Zealand, and even moving into professionals and the likes.
Yes, it is, most definitely.
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
Also, the elderly as well are being affected as well.
Right. Yeah, if you have sought food assistance, why didn't you get in touch? 2101, explain perhaps why you did it, maybe circumstances, if you'd like to, or email me, thepanel@rnz.co.nz. I've got to say, though, Tracy, I mean, average earnings, I mean, they have increased 5.2% in the year to March. So one would think, well, they also have more money in the pocket, don't they?
No. So these average earning increases doesn't affect those that are working multiple contract roles, such as cleaners. Also, people on a minimum wage this financial year got a 2% increase, which is well below the cost of living, leaving them effectively worse off. And also, as well, some companies don't actually do cost of living adjustments on wages.
Yeah.
Everyone assumes that people do, some companies do, but they don't.
Yeah, I'm just reading here, well, the New Zealand Food Network, they've got 65 registered food hubs nationwide supporting around 665,000 people. That's a lot of people, isn't it? A lot of Kiwis. Are you covering your bases at all, or are you finding as a network quite hard to keep up with demand, Tracy?
So the donations that we're currently receiving are definitely not keeping pace with the increase in the demand that we're experiencing. We have a waiting list of agencies requesting food assistance for their clients that we can't take on because we can't even satisfy the demand from our existing partners. So the organisations working with us are receiving even more requests for food than they previously were.
It's quite a situation, isn't it, Verity Johnson?
It is, yeah. I mean, I'm curious, Tracy, typically, so obviously the demand goes up for food parcels and food support. Where does the supply come from? Is this a government-funded thing? Is it entirely voluntary? Is it like big-hearted companies? Where do you get the food support from?
Okay, so at KCA, we get, our volunteers go out 6 days a week, which is Sunday to Friday, and they rescue food from all the Woolworths stores, Foodstuffs stores as well. And then we have the general public helping, and obviously church groups as well. But what we're seeing is as things are getting tighter for people, we're receiving less food donations. So, for instance, when my friends come around, most of the food that I pull out also is reduced to clear. Yeah. So, literally, it has a knock-on effect. So if I purchase food that says reduced clear because it's short-dated, I'm kind of effectively taking away from the food that my charity would rescue.
Yeah, Scott.
Hey, Tracy, this might be a bit of a silly question because I think I can hear it in your voice, but how concerned are you?
I'm very concerned. Like, our charity, KCA, we've actually cut or reduced expenditure last year because obviously there's a recession on and there's not as much funding for us either. So we're having to find ways to reduce our costs so that we can continue doing food rescue and helping those in need.
Yeah, a bit of response here. I haven't needed to use food assistance, says one, but I work in a library and we have a weekly soup kitchen in our library using rescued food from a food rescue charity called Fair Food. It's very popular and we get people from all walks of life coming in every week for it. So I asked the question whether or not you require food assistance. Tell us why. 21081. Finally, Tracy, if there are any members of Parliament listening to this program this evening, what would you like to say? What are you calling for this evening?
We're calling for the government to take action. Food rescue is a vital need in the community because we're diverting food from the land waste that's still fit for human consumption. So the food rescue agencies and local food banks are also needing funding, donations, and also volunteers, pretty much the same as all other agencies like ourselves. With the cost of living, we're finding fewer people have the time or are willing to volunteer as they're all cutting their own expenses as well to survive.
Yeah. Hey, appreciate your time, Tracy. I really do. And I hope to talk again. That's Tracy Wellington, the CEO of Kiwi Community Assistance, part of the New Zealand Food Network. They support around or feed 665,000 people. And that's a day, by the way. It's, gosh, without these sorts of networks and organisations, Scott, people wouldn't cope, would they?
No, not at all. Yeah. And that's a huge number of people.
Isn't
right?
it?
And to be honest, it's not just the impact on not having food. It's actually the impact on their pride as well. Like, I know what it's like to sit outside one of those food banks. When I was younger, we had to. In my family. And I remember seeing my dad's face when he walked out and how it had impact on him. And so you just think about the other psychological impacts that this is having on people. Like, that's something that really, and we're at the start of winter.
Mm. Yeah, which is the idea behind these social supermarkets, right? More of a supermarket model.
Yeah, and I think that it also raises a very interesting question for companies like Woolworths or Foodstuffs in terms of how much excess profit they made in the previous sort of 3 years, especially over that COVID period. They made a lot of excess profit. So what is that social responsibility, given that the food scarcity is clearly getting a hell of a lot worse? I'd want to know what their response is to that.
Very good. The panel, RNZ National, 21 past 6. By the way, keep those questions coming. If you've just joined us for our question of the day, which is, what do you think is the most overrated city that you've been to in the world? Quite a few coming through. Here's one just for to get you kick-started. Overrated city, it'll be Honolulu. Car and road-dominated city plonked into what would have once been a beautiful island. 21081, keep those coming. 22 past 6, into this. Once you reach 75 in New Zealand, by the way, can I just jump in with some breaking news here? It's come through right now. Wellington Hospital is in partial lockdown after a gun was fired outside the building. No injuries. You'll hear more about that in the headlines. But to this, once you reach 75 in the country, you're required to visit your doctor before your driver's license can be renewed. After 80, you have to do the same thing biannually. But some are saying the parameters for whether a GP passes or fails seniors needs to be revisited. Their argument lies in the fact that a memory test is not the right way to determine a person's competence behind the wheel. So yesterday on 9 to noon, Dr. Alexander Krizzle of the University of Saskatchewan's Driving Simulation Lab agreed that this was a poor indicator of someone's driving ability. Picking up on this, we have Acting President of Grey Power NZ Federation, David Marshall. Welcome, David.
Oh, good evening, Ross.
Do you agree that everyone should have a checkup, though, at the age of 75?
I think that's fair enough to have a medical assessment. It's just that we don't believe that it should include a test for early stage dementia for every patient.
I was thinking about this the other day, and you know, my mum's a really avid driver, loves getting behind the wheel. It must be quite a life change for someone who has been driving, what, say 45, 55 years, all of a sudden to be told you can't drive from tomorrow, and yet you still feel fighting fit.
Absolutely. And I must say, we don't want people driving who are not competent.
Right.
We're just saying that with this evaluation, having a compulsory cognitive test, which many of us, our memories are not the best, and it's quite stressful, and that should not be the decision maker as to whether or not someone is competent at driving.
Okay, what do you think, Scott? Giving up the keys?
On that point though, why would you not have that test then? Well, what's the downside in having the test? If it does show that people, their cognitive abilities are impacted, isn't that a good thing? Shouldn't we be seeing that?
Okay. If it's a patient the doctor knows and they see signs of early dementia, then yes, that could be a good test to have. The vast majority, though, are not at that stage. And to make them do the test and try and remember these things like addresses and a list of animals and draw a clock I'm on, etc., is quite frustrating, and particularly if they're under stress because they're worried they may lose their license and the consequences, it just builds too much stress, and particularly when the evidence shows that they are not good predictors of driving ability.
Okay. So how many people would fail?
How many fail?
Hmm.
I'm not sure what percentage it is, but it's certainly creating a lot of stress among our membership when they hear that that is what the doctor is doing with every patient. In other areas, doctors are purely sitting down, having a chat, testing eyesight, making sure that, you know, everything's fine for a person, not doing the test and signing the form, and the patient renews it.
Right,
it's quite different.
Well, you might be in the situation, you might have been failed, or you might have had your license not renewed, and it's pretty upsetting to you. Get in touch, 2101, or if you're approaching the age that you have to get these tests, what do you think of this? I'd love to hear from you, Verity.
So, David, are we calling for? So, are you suggesting that you should basically means test it, depending on like if the patient comes to you, your doctor makes the individual call if you need to have this test or not? And are you also suggesting that it's not currently being applied evenly across the country? Like some people are getting it done and some people aren't getting it done.
Okay. Yes, we've got the variety from the GP who knows the patient and just has a general chat and signs their form that they've brought in and they get their license renewed, through to those who are more thorough, who occasionally may use one of these tests because they're getting a little concerned about the patient, to those practices that have decided that every patient age 75 and older coming in for license renewal will do this test. The trouble is the number of who then go and sit at a practical test and pass shows that it isn't very predictive, and there's clinical studies developing, demonstrating that. So we're worried where it is used in a blanket sort of way for all patients that it's creating more stress on testing, etc.
Do you believe that, Scott, or do you have concerns?
Oh, I think if people are getting through the test, then awesome. Well, like,
yeah.
If it's what I think I'm hearing is the concern is it's stressing a whole bunch of people out who might not actually need
and
it.
And still be good drivers.
Yeah. But I think I think my body is awesome and really fighting fit, but when I go for a run, it tells me something else. So you're always going to think too much about yourself, right? So if you're having a test done by a doctor, I think that that's a good thing, but I can understand where people are coming from.
Yeah, someone says, hey, we all forget which side is wipers and which is indicators.
Yep.
So it seems pretty harsh.
Every day.
So that's a fair point. Although someone says, Wallace, I know of a number of oldies who should, their words, not mine, who should not be driving and are passing these tests. I think the testing needs to be more rigorous. What would you say to that?
I agree. I've had members write about what they've been through, and they've got neighbours who visited the doctor and never got put through it, who they think are quite irresponsible. So it's just that the standard is not the same from doctor to doctor throughout the country, and some can get through very easily, and for others it's very stressful.
So clearly there's a list somewhere of all the doctors that you need to be going to pass.
This is the topic du jour with everyone. What Peter says, we had a local GP who believed that people over 80 should not be allowed to drive irrespective of. Your thoughts, Dave?
That's a bit harsh. And this is where our members come back and say, look, the doctor didn't even ask me if I've ever had any accidents, you know, how much I drive per year or anything like that. It's irrelevant. I just got angry that it's so irrelevant, and then I have to spend all this money to go and have these tests. And one of the major issues is if they have to do an on-road safety test, they're only available in some centres. And so we have people in rural towns, like I live in Karikari, have to go into Mount Maunganui on a quite dangerous road with lots of roadworks currently into an area of the city that they're not familiar with to do their road test. Some just give up.
I don't know, Scott. What about you? When I'm 80, I see myself, I want to buy one of those really cool mobile scooters with a flag. that's what I'm looking forward to.
I'd be happy with a chauffeur.
I was about to say that. Yeah, I want like the Lady Penelope Thunderbird's chauffeur. So like, hopefully that would be helpful.
In a nutshell on the panel, though, what you're saying really here is that this is possibly absolutely ageist.
Yep.
Good on you. Very good to have you on. Oh, we've had a really big response to this, David, so we might even come back to you. Appreciate your time. That's Acting President of Grey Power, David Marshall. Gosh, my dad has a heart condition, granted a bit of a hypochondriac. His GP asked him when he turned 80, are you experiencing chest pains? Dad said, oh, yeah, the pain, the trauma. The GP followed with, Bob, if you have chest pains, I cannot sign off your license. Asking you again, are you experiencing chest pains? No, says Dad. License was signed off.
I know I should disapprove of that, but I do approve of that.
There could be a market for this.
Yeah, there's definitely a golden list of doctors who you should get in touch with.
I'm a GP listening about concerns regarding cognitive testing for driver's medical. I appreciate it's a crude tool, but I'm often surprised by the level of impairment that is masked, even in patients I know well. So I do think it's important. I agree the best test for competence is an on-road test, but these are expensive. Please note, we are testing if there are health issues that could impact on fitness to drive, not if they are safe to drive.
You see, I'm okay with that.
You're okay with that?
Yeah. And how long does it take? Like, I'd be interested. If it's a really long test that they have to go through, if it's something short, and if they're going to the doctor anyway, wouldn't it make sense to do it?
I do get the whole supercilious thing, though, like, because I've definitely been in doctor's offices where, like, so BMI is a classic example about how you don't get your BMI done.
Body mass index.
Yeah, and there's a lot of controversy about it, right? But they always tell me that I'm obese because of my, like, you know, height to weight ratio. I know, but I weigh about 89 kgs, and they always tell me that I'm obese. And there's a lot of, like, feedback on this because doctors will take that attitude with you, but it's a very supercilious attitude, and there's been, I can see how, you know, I mean, the BMI is famous for being like racist in the way that it basically is designed for, you know, skinny white men, and it's not designed for anyone who isn't. And I can get how if you're old and you're getting a GP who like has that superciliousness baked into the system where they think that they know better than you and you're old. So I do feel for that.
Look, this is the topic today, really, isn't it? Driving well is a tad stressful. Who wants a cohort of older laid-back geriatrics, basically? Not up to a little stress in a doctor's office. That's their words, not mine. Don't endorse that type of language. Anyway, you are on the panel, RNZ National, Scott Campbell, Verity Johnson.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.